The Children's Crisis Treatment Center supports WHYY. Did you know that 68% of Philadelphia residents have had an adverse childhood experience? From physical abuse to neglect to exposure to violence, these traumatic experiences during childhood can have a lifelong impact on a person's health and well-being. Philadelphia is at the forefront of healing and resilience. On March 20th at WHYY, experts will address Children and Toxic Stress, a public health response for Philadelphia. Information and to register at cctckids.org.
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Ahead this evening, Daily News reporters Barbara Laker and Wendy Ruderman talk about tracking down corruption and betrayal in the city of Philadelphia. First, after nearly 3 years, the Philadelphia Housing Authority is finally preparing to demolish Queen Lane Apartments. It's a 16-story high-rise in Germantown with a checkered past. 55 townhomes will replace the now-shuttered tower. And as WHYY's Aaron Mosell reports, it took this long because a burial ground was found on the site.
Corliss Gray couldn't be happier that construction vehicles will soon start rumbling and beeping across the street from her home. To Gray's ears, it'll sound like sweet music.
The whole neighbor is going to feel it. They don't realize, but once that new complex gets built, people will be pleased.
Gray, a longtime Philadelphia Housing Authority resident, is also overjoyed that the agency's waiting list will shrink a bit. It currently has more than 100,000 names.
We need them 55 units. We need every little house we can get.
PHA closed the 1950s-era high-rise at West Queen Lane in Pulaski nearly 3 years ago to make way for the new development. The discovery of a potter's field beneath the site, however, changed everything. The 18th-century burial ground, created, according to historians, for, quote, strangers, Negroes, and mulattoes, added a complex layer to a historical review that had to be completed before the building could be demolished. At the request of residents, PHA agreed to build around the cemetery and paid for two archaeological surveys, costing at least $1 million to pinpoint its boundaries. The stuck project broke loose in late February when PHA, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, neighbors, and other stakeholders signed a so-called programmatic agreement that calls for ensuring none of the new buildings will cover the Potter's Field location. HUD could now give PHA the green light to prepare for demolition.
It came as a relief for us.
That's PHA's executive director, Kelvin Jeremiah.
Our first goal was to redevelop the site, and it was one hurdle that I think we needed to overcome.
Jeremiah says the agency came incredibly close to simply gutting and renovating the existing building.
For 3 years, we had an asset that was non-performing. We weren't receiving any income in terms of rents. The building remained vacant.
Nearby neighbor Kristen Haskins Sims, who helped fight to preserve the Potter's Field, says she's glad the agency will implode the tower. She's praying that the new development represents the start of a more positive chapter for Queen Lane Apartments and the still struggling blocks that surround it.
It casts a shadow, I mean, physically and mentally and emotionally, and I think for that to come down, it'll just be a huge weight that's lifted off the community.
The nearly 60-year-old building had a long history of crime, drug dealing, and even shootings. Demolition is scheduled for October. Construction is expected to last a year. The legal agreement demands work will stop temporarily if any additional historic resources are found during the project. To date, no human remains have been discovered, and nothing has indicated that the cemetery is bigger than the roughly 2-acre plot found on historic maps. A plaque or historic marker will designate the Potter's Field portion of the site. I'm Aaron Mosell, WHYY News.
The Philadelphia Daily News won its first ever Pulitzer Prize for investigative reporting in 2010. The Tainted Justice series exposed extensive wrongdoings committed by narcotics officers in the city police department. Out this month, reporters Wendy Ruderman and Barbara Laker's book entitled Busted, A Tale of Corruption and Betrayal in the City of Brotherly Love, assimilated and told while the parent newspaper's resources and reach were on the wane. Joining me now, Wendy Ruderman and Barbara Laker, thanks for being here on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thanks for having us.
There are heroes and villains in this book, but overall, everybody seems to be human, complex, flawed.
Yes. That's extremely right. And in the course of writing the book, I mean,
you know, you would think that Jeff Chudik, the officer in which the investigation began with, was like this completely, you know, we would make him out to be completely evil. And actually, I found we found sympathetic parts of him and parts of him we really liked. And so the characters in the book are very, they're real people and they're complicated and they're not all good and they're not all bad. And I don't think that Barbara and I come across as angels necessarily in the book. Like, we kind of air all of our crazy and therefore, Barbara and I are main characters, along with all these other characters, like drug dealers.
What really came across to me was your incredible drive and, frankly, your love for what you do and love for newspapers. What is the status of newspapers in 2014?
When we wrote this book, we were in bankruptcy, and our papers are up for auction again. And so the state of newspapers across the country is dire.
Who's picking up the slack?
Well, right now, our newspapers, the Daily News and the Philadelphia Inquirer and Philly.com, we're all under the same umbrella. We're headed for auction. I do believe it's like the sixth time in 8 years. So the future is uncertain for what our organization is going to look like. As we say in the book, that we've trained an entire generation of readers that news is free and that they'll go and they'll pay $4, $5. I'll do it too for a cup of cappuccino at Starbucks, but I won't pay for a subscription to a newspaper because I can just look at my Twitter feed and read anything I want to read. And nobody knows how to close Pandora's box, so to speak. And there's no business model that feels sustainable at the moment.
Over the course of Busted, you certainly made enemies, members of the police department, the FBI, drug dealers, informants, literally putting yourself in harm's way. And I suspect that very few of the readers of this book will have ever before been in touch with that kind of a situation firsthand.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people read the book and they say, wow, you guys are really courageous. That was really something. Like, you really put your lives on the line. That I can't believe how courageous you were. But at the time, other than, I mean, we had our moments where we were worried, where the police department, not the police department, but some rogue cops were, you know, taunting us and wishing us dead and saying all kinds of nasty things about us and putting my home address out there on a chat site that they had.
But when it crossed to that level where your home address was publicized, then I wonder if your family members found it courageous as well.
You know, this is really terrible, but at the time, I didn't tell my husband. I was married at the time, and I didn't tell him, but I would open up the door and peek around in the morning and then run out and get my newspaper and then run back in and lock the door. And I'm not a door locker, so my husband was always like, why are you locking the door? And I'm like, oh, you know, I'm just locking the door. And for a reporter, being in the middle of everything, being a part of history, telling history, It's a huge privilege and one that I don't want to give up.
If that adrenaline is your drug and you share that passion as well, do you go into kind of a postpartum when a series like this is completed?
Yeah, you kind of do. I mean, you want the next story, the next high. It's almost like a high, I think, to work on a story like this. I think it's exciting to go places that we went, to get people to talk to us in a world that we don't live in. And most people, like you said, in Philadelphia, don't even visit.
In 2014, what results have come from this investigation, though? Certainly the specific perpetrators are still working in the police department.
Yes, they are. All five officers have been placed on desk duty, but they're still getting salaries through taxpayers' money, and they're collecting pensions.
But as you can see, there's still police officers getting arrested and getting into trouble. It's like the same thing over and over again. So it's really disheartening that it seems like nothing changes.
How's reaction been so far to the book?
People say they really do enjoy the book and can't stop reading it once they start.
Yeah, we hear that a lot, that they start reading it and then they can't put it down and they're sort of cursing us because it's 3 o'clock in the morning and they have to go to work the next day.
Obviously, those are curses of exhilaration versus some of the cursing we heard
in the pages
of Busted.
Yeah. Obviously, journalists really love the book because they see themselves in it. I mean, it's how could you not if you love what you do? And women or regular people who read the book, they just love the characters, the strength of Barbara and myself, and they get a kick out of us.
Wendy Ruderman, Barbara Laker, thanks so much for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Philadelphia Daily News Pulitzer Prize winning reporters Barbara Laker and Wendy Ruderman on Newsworks tonight. Go to newsworks.org to learn more about how they put themselves in harm's way. And In the face of personal danger, she and Barbara were motivated by Dr. Martin Luther King's message, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Also, they'll be speaking this evening at 7:30 at the Free Library of Philadelphia. Turning to this evening's headlines, at least a dozen protesters disrupted a town hall meeting with New Jersey Governor Chris Christie today in South River. It's near New Brunswick. They criticize his administration's distribution of Superstorm Sandy relief aid, also asking why the governor has not fired the head of the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey in the wake of the George Washington Bridge scandal. Earlier, the Republican governor criticized John Wisniewski, head of the legislative panel investigating the scandal, which involved blocking bridge traffic, apparently for political retribution. The nominating petition of Bob Guzzardi is being challenged in Pennsylvania's Commonwealth Court. He is Governor Tom Corbett's only opponent in the May 20th Republican primary. Four Republican voters filed the petition this afternoon with help from the state GOP. Guzzardi, a conservative activist and Ardmore businessman, needed to collect 2,000 signatures, including 100 in each of 10 counties. He turned in more than 3,100 signatures, but challengers say defects in his petition, such as the signatures of those not registered to vote, left him with the required number of signatures in only 8 counties. Guzzardi says the challenges reflect party leaders' concerns that he poses a threat to Corbett's reelection bid, and he says he'll defend his petitions in court. 43 degrees on Independence Mall, it's 6:17. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. Partly cloudy this evening, low overnight around 30 degrees. Tomorrow, overcast, there's a 50% chance of showers in the afternoon. Wednesday's high, 48. Still ahead, the owners of a Bucks County carpet mill turn an accidental fire into a boon for local artists and schools.
We love donations, and when they called us and said that we could come and get stuff, we were really excited.
Stay with Newsworks Tonight. We'll be back after this break.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. Legendary conductor Herbert Blumstedt returns to the Kimmel Center to lead the Philadelphia Orchestra in Brahms' First Symphony and Mozart's exquisite Grand Partita for Winds. Tickets at 215-893-1999 or online at philorc.org. This Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at the Kimmel Center, Blumstedt conducts Brahms First with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
Supporting WHYY, the Penn Program for Mindfulness provides tools for coping, personal growth, and transformation. 8-week foundation courses combine mindfulness techniques with cognitive science to help teach participants to change the way they experience the world. Participants will learn how mindfulness is used to manage life's biggest challenges. Courses begin in September, January, and April. More at pennmedicine.org/mindfulness or 215-615-2774. On May 30th and 31st, the program will host renowned mindfulness teacher Sharon Salzberg.
Hello, I'm Russell Kaufman, president of the Wistar Institute, a proud supporter of WHYY. For over 100 years, Wistar scientists have helped keep your families, friends, and employees healthy because of our research that guides the creation of early-stage drugs. We then work with the pharmaceutical industry for their final production. Our name may not be on these cancer drugs, but our fingerprints are all over them. To learn more about how Wistar keeps you healthy and our region economically strong, online at wistar.org.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Construction cranes dotting the skyline across several sections of Philadelphia give rise to hopes that the city has shaken off the shackles that constrained new building during the recession. Let's build a case with Darwin Beauvais, real estate attorney at Zarwin Baum in Philadelphia, and Stephen Mullen, president of the economic consulting firm eConsult Solutions. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us on Newsworks Tonight.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Darwin, as an attorney, I'm going to ask you to build that case. First of all, give us some obvious evidence of construction going up in the city.
Well, permits are on a rise. And if anyone walks down the street, there are street closures going throughout Center City. You'll find that we're moving in cranes. There's a couple of various projects in Center City of note that will give the average citizen an idea that there is construction going on. And therefore, I think we're in good shape for our future.
Steve, you concur? And is this construction primarily in the commercial sector?
Yes, I concur, but it's actually almost the exact opposite. Most of the construction here that we're seeing is institutional, which is continuing on from our universities and hospitals, and residential. You see the cranes for the multifamily residential skyscrapers, which are primarily right now apartments and growing significantly, but also it looks like the luxury condo market is coming back, and I think we'll see some cranes in that world too.
Steve, let's talk about taxes and abatements mm-hmm. and the role they play in 2014.
Right. I think they still play a very important role on two fronts. One is I think the tax abatement continues to be very, very important. There are legitimate questions now whether some types of development in some areas need the full amount of the tax abatement, which I think is a legitimate public policy question. It's been raised.
All in the context of a city that's far from fiscally sound.
Exactly on that front. But there still is a mismatch in Philadelphia for the demand, what people will pay for residential or commercial properties and how much it costs to produce it. And so the tax abatement helps out on that, especially in the residential market. But when you're talking about taxes, the commercial market, Philadelphia still has the same amount of occupied office space in Center City that it did in 1980. So there has not been growth there. And the biggest problem there is the business taxes here.
Darwin, above and beyond the onerous taxes for businesses, many who toil in the city and pay the city wage tax also find that to be onerous. To what extent is that a continuing drag on ultimately new construction? If the goal is growth, you need the market for that growth.
It's interesting that you ask that, because what I'm finding just on the residential side, you have the baby boomers wanting to come back into the city. So that's encouraging, because residential construction is still on the rise as a result of baby boomers, or empty nesters, if you will, wanting to come back and enjoy the city. So does the wage tax, do corporate income tax factor into that residential dynamic? Not as much, and I believe it's a personal decision, and what we're seeing is that we're getting more and more of these individuals coming in despite those barriers.
Steve, Darwin cites mm-hmm. baby boomers. We're also mm-hmm. experiencing an influx of young professionals. Right. The donut hole, though, are those who then consider having a family and schooling in right. Philadelphia. Much like a tax, mm-hmm. that decision point is driving many away, and if that's mm-hmm. not ultimately solved, it also, I would suggest, limits what Philadelphia can ultimately be.
You've described it perfectly. That's the limit here for residential growth. You have to have opportunities for schools, for families, if you really want to grow. Pew has done some studies now, released studies recently on the middle class, on the millennial population here, all sort of noting the millennials growing here, but to sort of the demographic and their behavior. They marry later and will look for opportunities for schools, but ultimately if you don't have good school options, you are not going to be living in the city unless you're super rich and you can, or you're very rich and you can afford other options. You pointed that out. That's like a tax. If you have to pay your property tax and pay for private education, that's like double taxation. That's a really hard thing for people to do.
Gentlemen, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Darwin Beauvais, practicing commercial, zoning, and government relations attorney at Zarwin Baum in Philadelphia, and Stephen Mullen, president of the economic consulting firm Econsult Solutions.
We built this city. We built this city on rock and roll.
Some artists in Philadelphia and beyond are having a late Christmas this year. An old-fashioned carpet weaving mill in Bucks County has been giving away 3 tons of woolen yarn. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports on a charitable act that looms large.
The Langhorne Carpet Company in Langhorne weaves high-quality carpets, and it recently found itself with 6,000 pounds of yarn to get rid of. Last August, the carpet mill had a small fire. Owner Bill Marr says the fire itself did very little damage.
Our dryer caught fire. They were cotton leaders in the dryer. They're not quite sure. It was an accident. The fire department was here in probably 15 minutes and put the fire out, but that was enough time to get a sooty smoke to penetrate the mill.
Now, I'm standing here amid a couple tons of yarn.
Yes.
I'm not smelling any smoke.
No. The thing about smoke is it can be very deceptive. And what they're saying is it's often atmospheric changes that cause smoke to come out.
If there is smoke in the yarn, it might only reveal itself next summer when it's hot. So any carpets made from it could be legally liable. So Meyer's insurance company told him, get rid of it.
We're down in the D.C. area.
Below the Mason-Dixon line.
This is Joanne and Wayne Dion. They came to supply themselves and their friends with yarn. They are with the Society for Creative Anachronism. That's an organization of medieval craft buffs.
You know, if everybody who's put an order gives me a buck for gas, we're covered.
The Dions are at the carpet company for an open house, which was a free-for-all for anyone who came in the door. Basically, grab what you can until it's all gone. But Mar reserved thousands of pounds of yarn for places like the University of the Arts, Philadelphia University, area design schools, and fiber artists who go through yarn by the truckload.
Well, right now I'm working on a loom right now.
This is Bill R. He prefers to use the first initial of his last name. He's 50 years old, and he's a resident at Melmark. It's a care facility for developmentally disabled adults located in Easttown, Pennsylvania. He's making placemats.
I've been working on this since back in the 70s. It's good and it's fun. I love it.
Other clients at Melmark are busily knitting and needlepointing, stuffed animals, tapestries, and flowers. Barney Warren teaches weaving at Melmark and says all these items are for sale.
And so they each can earn a share, and that's a paycheck every month that they'll get. So we want all the money to go to them. We don't want to have to be buying supplies. We want them to get the money in their paychecks. So we love donations, and when they called us and said that we could come and get stuff, we were really excited.
Warren accepted all the yarn that could fit in a van, but it wasn't enough. The Langhorne Carpet Company wanted to give them more. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
Finally this evening, donations have been raised to help a pit bull terrier who survived a gunshot wound to the face. Officials at the Stafford Veterinary Hospital tell the Press of Atlantic City that Boss, the pit bull, underwent surgery today that successfully removed the bullet from his neck and also repaired a torn ligament. In addition to hospital donations, an online fundraising campaign yielded more than $5,000. An office manager at the hospital says the response is so overwhelming that no more donations are needed. Boss was found March 7th, limping and bleeding while wandering in traffic on Route 9 in New Gretna in Burlington County. The couple that found him say they hope to adopt him. Prosecutors are investigating the shooting. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. You can download a podcast of this and other episodes of the show at newsworks.org. Tomorrow evening, we'll consider Trenton, New Jersey in a post-Tony Mack era. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.